Welcome to this Budget and Tax News Podcast. I'm Steve Stanek, Managing Editor of Budget and Tax News, and with us today is Bob Higgs, Senior Fellow in Political Economy for the Independent Institute, and he's also editor of the Institute's quarterly journal, The Independent Review. Thanks for being here with us today, Bob.
My pleasure, Steve.
You are the Senior Fellow in Political Economy, and when I look around at what's happening these days, I think we have a big political economy. We've got bank bailouts, auto company bailouts, stimulus packages, a Federal Reserve printing money like there's no tomorrow. I'm wondering, do you agree we have a political economy? And if you do, what do you think is on the horizon for the dollar and inflation?
Well, Steve, we're in the midst of what I've called critical episodes in the growth of government. I've been tracking these for a long time in my research, and this is the sixth major one by my way of taking them into account in the past century. And what we're seeing this time is very similar in a general way to what we've seen in the previous national emergencies. We see a surge of government growth in various dimensions. As you've mentioned, the monetary authorities are acting in an extremely expansive way. In fact, in the present episode, they've done things that have never been done before, and that creates a major threat of inflation in the future. But, of course, we've seen all these other surges of government power and increases in the size and scope of government, enormous peacetime deficits never before experienced. And so we're in the thick of it right now, and one never knows until it's over, and indeed until long after it's over, what the consequences will be, because some of them take a long time to play out. But we're certainly going to see major consequences as a result of the government's overreaction to the financial troubles of 2008.
Right now, we have, according to the Wall Street Journal from just a few days ago, inflation at a 44-year low. And, of course, we have record low interest rates. How do you account for this? How do you account for this huge surge in government involvement in the economy and yet record low interest rates and a 44-year low on inflation?
Well, what has happened is that the financial debacle of 2008 created an enormous amount of fear in the banking system and in related financial institutions. Of course, some of the biggest institutions went broke, particularly AIG and Fannie and Freddie, and in fact, a number of the large banks probably went broke also if the accounts had been kept properly. And the Federal Reserve reacted to this situation, treating it as if it were a liquidity crisis similar to the crisis experienced in the early 1930s. At that time, of course, there was a liquidity crisis because there was no deposit insurance, and when banks got in trouble, customers would often create a run on the bank, and this would not only cause that bank to fail because it was unable to pay out everything it owed to depositors on demand, but it would spill over and cascade through the banking system, and as banks tried to sell assets in order to pay depositors, they drove down asset values, and that in turn caused insolvencies in other banks and other financial institutions. So the Fed this time looked around, and Bernanke, being supposedly a great student of the Great Depression, was determined that he would not allow that to happen again. Unfortunately, I think he misread what was going on. We didn't have a liquidity crisis similar to the one of the early 30s. This time, we had momentary problems associated with interbank deposits for just a brief period in late summer of 2008. That, I'm sure, would have taken care of itself if the Fed had not jumped into the fray. But it did jump in, and it jumped in the form of basically bailing out the banks and other institutions that that owed money to one another, because somebody was afraid. I don't have access to what top decision makers said to one another on those occasions, but they are obviously afraid that a lot of big financial institutions would go down and drag one another down as they went, and that this would become some kind of a devastating systemic failure of the financial system and bring on some kind of a Great Depression. But in any event, whether that was a correct reading or not, they acted as if that's what they were trying to prevent, and they flooded the system with liquidity. The Fed basically just went out and bought all the shaky assets it could find, bought a ton of toxic securities, so-called, from the banks and from Fannie and Freddie and from others, and so now the Fed, which previously held only U.S. government securities as its assets, financial assets, and now holds all these crappy securities, much more of them than it holds of U.S. bonds, and so the Fed has made itself into a kind of one-man industrial policy for the financial sector. And in doing this, it's created so much uncertainty about who's going to be bailed out, who's not going to be bailed out, what are the rules going to be now. We don't just let people go bankrupt or let the FDIC wrap up a bank that's insolvent anymore the way we did before. We have all this uncertainty. And as the recession it became worse, along with these financial troubles, a lot of members of the public decided that they didn't know what was going to happen either, so it was smart for them to start saving more to get ready for bad times that might lie ahead. And so the upshot of all this is that the banks are trying to rebuild their balance sheets, so they don't want to make new loans. Many of them realize they are actually insolvent, and so again they have an incentive to rebuild their cash rather than making new loans and investments, and the whole economy now is working on the basis of a much higher degree of uncertainty than before, and as a result we have this actual cessation of inflation, notwithstanding the fact that we have over $1 trillion in excess reserves sitting in the banking system right now. It's just astonishing. And now, of course, the threat here, in my view, is that once the banks begin to feel more comfortable about their situation and start to use some of these excess reserves for more normal extension of loans and making of investments, the potential is there for an absolutely huge increase in the money stock. Now, that hasn't happened in the last couple of years. That's why actual inflation has been so low. We've had very little increase in money stock, and we've had an increased demand for money on the part of the public. And those things together have kept price inflation in check. But the potential has been created for hyperinflation, and the Fed now finds itself in a position of knowing it has to unwind from the acquisition of all these rotten securities. It has to at some point allow interest rates to rise because they can't be kept near zero forever. And as the recovery proceeds, the Fed won't want to keep interest rates so low. In any event, but the Fed finds itself, I think, in a real dilemma, Steve, because as it takes action, whether by selling some of these securities it's acquired in the last couple of years, or by other means, to get back to normal monetary policy, interest rates are going to be higher. And if interest rates start to rise at a time when there's lingering high unemployment, many people are going to be unhappy about that, and the politicians are going to complain, and political pressure will be brought against the Fed. And so it's not clear how the Fed will deal with that situation. And we have to have a lot of confidence both in their technical prowess and in their political courage to believe they'll be able to manage this situation without the result being high rates of inflation.
But should we have any confidence in them? Alan Greenspan has publicly declared he did not see a bubble. Ben Bernanke, of course, was Fed chairman when things started to fall apart. But again, he has done these things you've described, which put us at high risk. You know, I'm old enough to remember the days of the Soviet Union when people in this country used to mock Soviet central planning. The way I look at what is happening with our government now and with the Federal Reserve, which is sort of a quasi-governmental agency, they're central planning. If Soviet central planners couldn't get things right, why should American central planners get things right?
Oh, I'm sure they'll get things wrong, Steve. The question is how wrong they'll get them, and the specific ways in which they'll get them wrong, because you know there are many different degrees of wrongness. They can get things pretty wrong without creating disaster, or they can get things much more wrong and create disaster. So that's where the uncertainty lies. I don't think there's any person with any historical perspective that thinks that these monetary central planners are any more capable than the people that tried to plan the Soviet economy. They're not. They're not because they can't be. They don't have the knowledge. No one has the knowledge required to make this kind of central planning work. But just as the Soviet Union lasted for 60 years or more, you know, the Federal Reserve has stumbled along here now for almost a century. And, of course, there have been some major disasters along the way.
There have been. The Great Depression occurred after the creation of the Federal Reserve.
Absolutely.
Stagflation of the 70s with the Federal Reserve. That's why I have so little confidence.
But at the same time, there have been other periods when the Fed seemed to be performing well, and it even got to, you know, people like Milton Friedman praising Alan Greenspan's astuteness. So, you know, they are capable of blundering into tolerable policies, and this time I think about all we can do is hope that they will blunder in that direction.
You know, we started talking about inflation. And when you look at the value of a dollar going back to when the Federal Reserve was created in 1913, a dollar today has lost somewhere around 95% of its value.
Right.
Yet before the creation of the Federal Reserve, except for strange times like during the Civil War, a dollar decades later was worth what it was decades earlier.
Yes. Well, there's no doubt that the secular result of the Federal Reserve has been a great loss of purchasing power for the dollar. As you say, it's it's worth about 4 cents in terms of 1913 purchasing power now. But at the same time, you know, if we call this to the attention of Fed decision makers, they would say, well, that's a very long time, and you know, it took 100 years to do that, and meanwhile, we had bigger fish to fry, and they've always got bigger fish to fry. They're always living for the moment. That's the trouble with any kind of government policy, whether monetary policy making or fiscal or regulatory, anything else. All of these people have a political time horizon which extends about 24 hours.
Yeah.
And so they're always fighting the fire that they see around them right now, and basically forgetting about the long-term consequences that are going to grow out of these short-term actions. And, but, you know, in the long run, here we are. We're alive, despite what Keynes assured us. And those long-run consequences do come home to roost.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you were in charge of the U.S. economy, what would you be doing?
I would be deregulating in every direction, reducing taxes, reducing government expenditures. I think people simply do not appreciate the extent to which the U.S. Economy has, over the many, many years, come to be tied in countless knots by government policies of all kinds. And unless we can find a way to back away from this level of government involvement in economic life, I think it's inevitable that we will experience one crisis after another until the whole system finally smashes.
Have you seen USA Today this morning?
I have not.
They have a story. The headline on it is Private Pay Shrinks to Historic Lows. And the thrust of the article is that as a percentage of personal income, private pay has never been lower and government handouts has never been higher.
Right.
What do you make of that?
Well, that's been a tendency that's been moving in that direction for a long time, of course, and what's happened in the current crisis is that many of these government measures, particularly the Obama stimulus package, so-called, simply moved us a jolt further in that same direction by increasing the money available to pay state and local government employees by making money available for people who were on the verge of losing their homes to foreclosure, and money available for various kinds of welfare payments and unemployment insurance and what have you. So all of these things simply increase the proportion of personal income that's coming from some government payment.
Yeah. Do you see any end in sight?
Well, there must be an end at some point. Right now, I don't see an end in the near term. I think there's more ruin left in this system, and it may take another crisis or two before it finally reaches the point at which it can't limp ahead any longer with this kind of Band-Aid solution to every crisis, because each time the government intervenes, it simply magnifies and complicates all the preceding interventions. And so the system becomes more and more unworkable, more and more filled with disincentives to actual wealth production over time, and more subject to political decision-making as opposed to economic or rational decision making. So it can't go on forever, Steve. We know that, but I'm not a prophet, and I can't really say with any confidence how long it can continue to go on this way. I don't think it can go on another 50 years, let's say, as it's gone on the past century. But that's a very rough guess on my part.
Well, on that happy note, we'll end. I hope we get some rationality, and I hope it comes back sooner than 50 years from now.
Yeah, let us pray.
Yeah. Well, Bob Higgs, senior fellow at the Independent Institute, I thank you very much for helping with our podcast, and I hope you have a good day.
Thank you, Steve. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. I enjoyed it.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.